Welcome to the Startup Fair. Are you an exhibitor?
Yeah, Rachel Dunn, Twinkle Cupcakes.
Right. Got your schedule and coffee token?
Yep.
Oh, and your public liability insurance?
No.
We need it for all stallholders. Contact Direct Line. Their annual public liability policy covers you at trade fairs, and they'll email right away to confirm you're covered.
So I could still set it up today?
Sure.
With an extra coffee token.
Nice try. Next, please.
Instant proof and confirmation of cover. Can your public liability insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required, underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Wednesday, April 8, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday. You can go to iTunes, you can download it, feel free to share it, feel free to subscribe to it. If you do enjoy the podcast, and our numbers are going up, we appreciate that so much, but if you do enjoy the podcast, please, please, please go on to iTunes, give us that 5-star rating. Give us a nice review. Say how much you love it. It just helps us in the new and upcoming podcasts that are on iTunes. If you're not an iTunes person and you say, I want to listen to it, I still want to catch it, I heard it somewhere and I still want to hear it, but I'm not an iTunes person, that's easy. Just go to Stitcher.com. You can find us there as well. Hey, this week on the podcast, we've got a lot of things to get to. Going to recap the Final Four in the championship game, of course, in college hoops. Great, great weekend of college basketball. Going to talk a little bit about some Major League Baseball. I know, I can't believe I'm doing it either, but it's about that time of year. We've got to do that. Got a little bit of NFL we've got to get to. Going to hand out some college basketball awards like we do every season. And we're going to look ahead a little bit to the NBA playoffs that are coming up very, very quickly. Of course, today we have our Daily Dose Top 5. We've got that every single week, a very popular segment. You don't want to miss that. First things first, let's get these things out of the way. If you want to contact me, you've got some feedback, you've got a thought, you've got a question, whatever that might be, you can hit me on Twitter. Twitter handle is @DailyDoseSports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. You can find me there. Same thing for Facebook, it's Daily Dose Sports. And if you haven't checked out the website yet, you really need to go over there. Got a few articles, got a few polls, got a few questions for you, a few different things that are on the website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can check us out. Do you realize we are on episode 18? Episode 18 already. Doesn't it seem like we're just flying? Hey, we've got some breaking news coming out, some things we want to get to first and foremost. Of course, you know, the news last night, Connecticut women give Gino Auriemma his 10th national championship. I mean, the UConn Huskies beat Notre Dame last night. Hey, good for Notre Dame. You covered the spread. I guess that's something. But, you know, UConn, is UConn good for women's college hoops? Or are they bad for women's college hoops? Because it kind of seems like when they are good, it seems like everyone else is just playing for a second. I like when UConn is good because it seems to me, it feels like to me, like when they're on and when they're really, really good, maybe the average sports fan that really isn't going to watch women's hoops anyways might at least flip over and check out a few minutes of it, and I think that is actually good for the game. But last night, Gino Auriemma is 10-0 in championship games. 10-0. Never lost. Amazing, amazing run that he has been on. And, you know, we've been talking just recently, a lot of talk about Mike Krzyzewski and what he did and you know, the championship that he won and where does that put it. Where is Gino at in all this? He's a pretty good coach. Is Gino in the top, you know, basketball coaches of all time? Is he up in that echelon? Because he's pretty good. 10-0? Show me someone else who is. I just thought of someone. Yeah, we might talk about that a little bit later. Hey, Tiger Woods is saying it's going to take a lot of work to get ready for the Masters. It's going to take a lot of work. He is doing some practice, though, and is going to give the Masters a shot. Going to keep an eye on Tiger Woods. He's only played, what, like 47 holes this whole year, and he hasn't played since February. Talking about going to give the Masters a shot. And I'm starting to hear from certain people. There are some talking hairdos out there that are saying Woods is a contender at the Masters. Now, I have gone on record, and I said this, if you were a listener to the Daily Dose radio show back in the day, I have said well over a year ago, I don't think Tiger is ever going to win another major. I'm cheering for him. I'm hoping that he does. I just don't see any way that he possibly could. It's not anything, you know, people say, well, he's got his head right. He's taking care of the mental part of the game. It's not mental for me with Tiger. You can overcome things mentally as an older player. You know what you can't overcome? Age. You can't overcome the fact that your body can no longer do the things that it once did. And that is the struggle that I believe exists with Tiger. I look at Tiger a little bit, and please don't misunderstand this statement. I look at Tiger a little bit like I did Mike Tyson. And let me just explain that for a second. A lot of people, when Tyson got beat by Douglas, everyone said, well, that's because Mike's head wasn't right. That's because he was having the Robin Givens issues. His head wasn't right. That's not what it was. It was because physically, Mike Tyson never was a great, great fighter. Great punching power, really good slugger, but never a great fighter. That's not what Mike was. It had nothing to do with his head. I'm not saying Tiger was never a great golfer. Obviously, he was. What I'm saying is it's not a mental thing. It's a physical thing. He can overcome the mental. He can go do some Zen and get into all the mind stuff, and he can get his mind completely right. I don't think his knees and his back are going to allow him to compete at a high level. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Keep an eye on Tiger. I'm cheering for Tiger. Golf is way more interesting when he's good. I just don't think physically he's able to do it. Hey, New England's Patriots running back LeGarrette Blount has been suspended without pay for the 2015 regular season opener. He's going to lose about $48,000. Apparently, he had some sort of illegal substance. Now, tell me if I'm wrong, but this isn't the first time LeGarrette Blount has gotten popped for illegal substance, right? Hasn't this happened times before? How is he only getting one game? How does this work? I thought LeGarrette Blount maybe would get, when I saw that he had gotten popped, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, that's going to be five or six games. No, one game. And we go back to what I've said before. Robert Kraft is running the NFL. Let's be real clear about that. Here's a weird story coming out, and this is coming out of New York. Indiana Pacers forward Chris Copeland and two women were stabbed outside a nightclub early Wednesday morning in Manhattan. And when this happened that, you know, there's an argument on the street. Two Atlanta Hawks players were arrested too. I guess we're going to be, you know, kind of trying to sort this out. I guess it's a real popular club. Kind of keep an eye on exactly what is going on here because, you know, you get, and the Hawks players, you know, what is his name? Petro Antic, I think, and Thabo Sefolosha, two guys that you have no idea who they are. But they were arrested on charges of obstructing the crime scene, and there was a fight outside this club. This is going to get interesting. Keep an eye on this because the news is just kind of starting to come out, and they say there's maybe some video footage, and you know how good. Whenever they say there's video footage, That's when you start tuning in. That's when it starts getting real interesting. Because I want to see exactly how this comes out. Right now, it's a little bit sketchy, but there's just some early details coming out. Speaking of sketchy, the Aaron Hernandez trial is, you know, going to jury decision right now. And the Aaron Hernandez trial, you know, when it first was coming out, when we first were looking at this and the death of Odin Lloyd, and he was going to be on trial for this Odin Lloyd murder here. The original thinking was that he's probably gonna get out with this one because they just don't have any evidence. They just don't have enough to pin this one on him. The next one, because remember, as soon as he gets done with this one, he's going out for another murder trial. This is just the first one. But now they've kind of started to find some things, and they've kind of started to present some evidence. And see, they originally couldn't place Hernandez at the place. They couldn't put him at the place where the murder took place. Now, his own defense attorney has actually come out and said, well, he was there with some friends, but he didn't do it. They did it. It was just some other guys. And he didn't want them to do it. He was really, really upset about them doing it. But then the next day, they all hung out and, you know, sat in the pool and drank smoothies. But he didn't want them to do it. This really, really upset him. He was really upset. The next day, he had no choice but to sit around and drink smoothies with them. Seriously? This is the job the defense is doing? Hernandez is going to jail for a long time, and we haven't even got to the second trial. I'm looking at this trial now. Like I said, I thought when this trial first came, he would probably be found not guilty, just didn't have enough evidence to be on a shadow of a doubt kind of thing. I think they're going to get him on this. I think this first trial, he's going to be found guilty. And here's the other thing. Apparently, there is a law up in Massachusetts where even if you were there and you didn't actually do it, but you knew about it and you didn't do anything, he could still get found guilty on that. So it's not like he just say, okay, we'll pin it completely on the other guys. They were all jacked up on PCP or whatever they're saying, and then it'll go away from Hernandez. That's actually not the case. He's still probably going to get stuck with it. Going to be very, very interesting to see how these next few trials go, because we do have this one, and the decision should be coming down probably next week, and then we have the next one. And again, I'm still waiting. I want to see if Bill Belichick gets called to the stand. That's going to be interesting. Let's jump into college basketball because we have a lot of things to get to today. Before we recap the Final Four, though, I want to talk about just a couple different moves that have taken place in college hoops. Shaka Smart, obviously the coach for a long time at Virginia Commonwealth, has gone to Texas. Now UT has Smart, Shaka Smart, and Charlie Strong. If that is not a t-shirt, I'll be very, very shocked. Here's the thing to think about, though, and I like Shaka. I like Shaka Smart a lot. I've watched him since he was as an assistant coach. Very, very good. But the Atlantic 10 that he was in is very, very different from the Big 12 that he's going to. And I don't think that he can't coach. I think he's very, very good. I think he will get Texas back to what they should be. But I just want you to think about this for a minute. I mean, Fordham is a little bit different than going against Kansas and Bill Self. LaSalle is just a touch different than going against Lon Kruger at Oklahoma. I mean, even a school like Texas Tech has Tubby Smith. Do you think St. Bonaventure is in any way comparable to West Virginia and what Bob Huggins does? It's going to be an adjustment for Shaka Smart. Like I said, I think he'll get them back to where Texas is in the tournament, back to where Texas is competitive, but it's going to take a little bit of time, and he's going to be on a little bit different of a field than what he was back at VCU. That's a little bit different. Speaking of coaching moves, you know, the SEC, we always talk about SEC football, SEC football, SEC football. We rarely talk about SEC basketball unless we're talking about Kentucky this year and how they ran through SEC basketball because no one was very good. But take a look at what is going on in the SEC. In basketball, not in football. Now, obviously, in basketball, you've got the two big dogs in the SEC. You've got John Calipari at Kentucky, and you know, the run they went on this year. You've got Billy Donovan at Florida. He's got two championships, a lot of Final Fours. Those are the two big ones. But take a look at the rest of the SEC and what's going on down there. Now, Tennessee goes and get Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes, you can say what you want about his coaching and what he does with X's and O's and some of those things. There's no question that Rick Barnes can recruit. He will get big, big time talent to come to Tennessee. Alabama goes and gets Avery Johnson. Now, it's a little bit of a confusing move that they go get Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson has never coached college ball. He hasn't done the recruiting thing. And it's even a little bit more weird that Alabama went and paid him $3 million. I thought that was kind of odd. But there's no question with you know, the publicity that he's had being on, you know, ESPN and all this stuff, kids are going to know who he is. I think kids will want to go play for him. He's got that kind of personality. I think he'll draw people in. Mississippi State went and got Ben Howland. And if you remember Ben Howland and the type of players that he got when he was at UCLA, there's no question that he could bring some big-time talent to Mississippi State, a school that, I mean, is a complete afterthought in most sports, but especially in basketball. What has Mississippi State done? Ben Howland can recruit, and when they get there, he can coach them up, teach those kids how to play defense, have a very, very competitive team. When you add to that, you know, Bruce Pearl is at Auburn, Fox is at Georgia. I mean, the SEC is starting to get at least the coaches in place to put together a pretty decent conference. Now, we'll see what all of them do with it. We'll see where this all goes. But the SEC is starting to compile a little bit of a coaching base there that has not been there in the past. Usually it's been because it's just completely, you know, no one pays attention to it. No one even looks at the SEC in hoops. It's a football conference and a football conference only. Keep an eye on the SEC in basketball. It may start to get better. Let's talk a little bit about the Final Four, because we had a pretty good Final Four. The early game, not great, but the late game more than made up for it. And I know it was 3-4 days ago. Michigan State in that first game against Duke just could not hang with Duke. And you know, the worst thing that could have happened, and I know Tom Izzo was looking at this when it happened, just as a coach, you feel for him, because he's going, we came out and they hit a couple early jumpers and they had an early lead, and that is the worst thing that could have happened for Michigan State. You would almost rather they miss those early jumpers so you could get on them and say, go inside, don't settle for these jumpers. Instead, they hit a couple of them, and then from there on, they kept shooting them and kept shooting them and kept shooting them, even though you knew they weren't going to go down. Duke wins the free throw battle, and they win the dunk layup battle. If you get dunks and layups and you get free throws, you're winning most games. Duke shot 37 free throws to just 16 for Michigan State. And then they shot 52% from the field. And most of them, like I said, were on layups and dunks. That game, it was over very, very early. But the Wisconsin versus Kentucky game, really, really good game. One of those, you know, we talked last week, great Final Four games. A lot of times, you know, the championship game is maybe here or there. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. We talked last week about what are the greatest Final Four games. The Wisconsin versus Kentucky game was a great Final Four game. You know the worst thing for Kentucky after they lost? And we had talked about they were beatable, but we just didn't know if there was anyone out there who was capable of beating them. It wasn't that Kentucky wasn't beatable. They were. It was a matter of could anyone go out there and play and finish strong. The worst thing for Kentucky, though, is that we kind of are going to dismiss what they did. I mean, they went 38-0. And we kind of downgrade how good they are because, they got beat by Wisconsin. Doesn't really count. It's kind of like the Patriots when they went close to the Super Bowl and then lost to the Giants. It's no big deal. Were you really that good? Yes, they still were pretty good. And here's the thing to keep in mind with those Kentucky players. It doesn't make me think, a lot of people are comparing them to the UNLV team, UNLV of 91, or, you know, these teams that went so far and got so close and then ended up, you know, losing in the tournament. I don't think of those teams as, and maybe I should, but I think of those Fab Five teams that went to the championship game and then lost. Because the thing you have to keep in mind, these aren't seniors. These are just freshmen and sophomores. If they stayed around until their junior and senior year, imagine how great they would be. They are very, very good teams. Young and inexperienced, but great, talented teams. Wisconsin just played so well on Saturday night. And it seemed like every time there was a mismatch on the floor, Wisconsin found it. Shot 22 free throws to Kentucky's 10, but they kept going inside. And I said last week they would have to go inside. If they were going to have any chance of beating Kentucky, they're going to have to go inside, try to get foul trouble, see if they could finish around the basket. And then they out-rebound a longer, taller Kentucky team, 34-22. I mean, Kentucky was a much, much bigger team. And we talked about last week, how will Wisconsin defend the post? We saw what Notre Dame did. Notre Dame basically just said, yeah, let Towns catch it, and then, I don't know, hopefully he misses the shot or something. That's not how Wisconsin defended it. They pressured the ball, which is always the key to post defense. How well can you pressure the ball on the perimeter and make that a difficult pass? Can you make them use some shot clock in even getting the ball inside? And then they dug down with their guards, kind of slapped at it, see if they could get any kind of pressure down low. Towns finishes with 16 points, but he had to work pretty hard for those 16 points. And Willie Cauley-Stein, honestly, kind of started to give me that look. And I like him. I really like what he does defensively. He can guard anyone from a 1 to a 5. But Willie Cauley-Stein kind of started to have that look like, I don't know if you can score 20 points in an empty gym. Because he had nothing offensively for Wisconsin. You know, and it started to just kind of stick with me as I watched this game. Kentucky, they have all these AAU stars on this team. Didn't they kind of start to look like they were more of an AAU team down the stretch? They couldn't run a set. They couldn't execute. When they needed a big, big play and a big bucket, they just couldn't execute anything. They couldn't get anything going consistently. I mean, when, you know, Wisconsin finished that game 15-4 to finish out the game. And with about, I don't know, what is it, 10 seconds left, 15 seconds left, Kentucky calls a timeout. They're down by 4. And Calipari is over there and he's drawing up the play. And that is the kind of stuff that I want to see. I want to see, what does he draw up here? What does he run here? Because if you're in that situation And if you haven't been around it or you haven't coached in that situation, here's typically what you're going to do as a coach. It's not like the Hoosiers thing. Hey, let's run the picket fence. Here's a tricky play. No, it's let's run a set that we've run either tonight or in the past that we're pretty comfortable with, and let's get a good look. It's a two possession game. So if it's an open three, that's fine. We'll take it, but let's have a good set here. Or if we've run a set and they've played it well, let's run a counter to that set and see if we can kind of get them on that. So I'm kind of looking with great curiosity at what Calipari is going to draw up here. You're down by four, two possession game. Let's get something quick, go into the hoop. Let's foul them. Let's extend the game. Let's see what they come out, throw it to Aaron Harrison, and he takes about a 25-foot air ball. That's what you drew up? I have just a little bit. I'm a little bit suspect that maybe that wasn't what. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Aaron, you pop up here near half court and then just chuck it, and hopefully it goes in. Didn't look that well thought out. But it kind of reminded me that, oh, yeah, these are kind of AAU kids, and they're not used to executing a set quick hitter to get a good look with the player that I want from the position that I want. And that's what you're looking for in that kind of situation. Very, very odd down the stretch. We go on to Monday night. Let's fast forward to Monday night. You know, Monday night was the highest rated championship game in like 18 years. I think going back to like Arizona and Kentucky. A little bit compelling. Of course, you have Duke in there. There are the people that are going to watch because Duke's in it there and cheer for them. Everyone's going to watch if you hate Duke because you want to root against them. And to be honest, I was, you know, texting with a friend during the early part of the game, and I said I'm very, very worried that Wisconsin is going to run out of gas, that they are just going to be spent from Saturday night. Because remember on Saturday night when they beat Kentucky, the celebration, and they were the late game, and they went out and they were running out on the floor and jumping around like they had just won the championship. That concerned me a great deal. That concerned me a great deal because you still have one more game to go. You still have that next one. It's like when, you know, USA beats Russia back in 80 in you know, Olympic hockey. You still had that next game you had to play against Finland or whoever it was, and you still had to win it. Wisconsin still had one more to go, and I wonder if they spent so much energy trying to get past Kentucky. Duke shoots the ball well early, but Okafor is in foul trouble, and, you know, he picks up his second foul with about 10 minutes left. And Mike Krzyzewski has a rule that if you pick up your second foul in the first half, you sit the rest of the first half. And I understand why he has that. They had to get him out. Here is a misnomer in basketball. And a lot of fans, I know, were kind of complaining, you know, Kay should keep him in there. Okafor's got to be on the floor. Here's a question for you. I'm just going to lob this out to my audience who I know is smarter than the average sports fan. Remember, this is the Thinking Man Sports Show. I'm going to lob this out to you. How many fouls do you get in a college basketball game? How many fouls do you get? And I know most everyone is going to say five. But you don't. You don't get five. You might think you do. You do not. At five, you get disqualified. You get four, basically. So at five, I'm out of the game. I don't get five. At five, I'm gone. And so when Coach K sits him down, it's because, well, yeah, you're halfway there. I've got to get you out. You've only got really two more fouls to give. And so he sits him down. And this was when I started to get a little bit concerned. Because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, with Okafor out, they're going inside to Kaminsky. They're just going to feed the post. They're just going to go inside every single time. And we're going to see Wisconsin extend this lead a little bit. That's not what happened. Duke goes to the 3-2 zone, kind of trapping a little bit, moving out, pressuring the perimeter players. And instead of saying, okay, great, we're going to feed the post even more, and we're going to let you go inside, see what you have on the backside, see if we can get some inside-outside action going. They start settling for jumpers. They start settling for threes. And Duke comes back, and the game is tied at halftime. And Okafor has been sitting out for 10 minutes. Same thing happened in the second half when Wisconsin goes up by 9. This time, both Okafor and Justice Winslow are sitting on the bench in foul trouble. And again, I'm waiting for Wisconsin. Okay, this is the time. You got to extend this lead. You got to start, you know, putting this away. Settling for threes, settling for jumpers, not going to the hoop. And as good as Sam Dekker had been in the tournament, and he had been great the last two games against Carolina and against Kentucky, Dekker stepped up his game big time. He goes 6 of 15 for 12 points, never got to the free throw line once. And then Grayson Allen, a kid who is kind of forgotten over on the Duke bench, steps in and leads this comeback. And yes, there were some hideous, atrocious calls. The tournament in general had horrible officiating. The NCAA has got to decide what they're going to do with the charge block call, because it doesn't make any sense. Every year, the NCAA comes out and they say, hey, this year, we're not going to give you the charge if you slide in under an offensive player. Don't allow them to land and they land on you. We're not going to give them that charge. We're going to make that a block every single time. And every single time we saw this in the tournament, they awarded the charge anyways. I can't figure it out. And then with Grayson Allen, he came in two or three possessions in a row, drove into the defensive player and threw up a shot, and they gave him the and one. Now, last I checked, a defensive player is allowed to maintain his lateral position. Is he not? That was not the case. I don't know. You know what concerned me early when the foul count was like 7-2 early or 7-3 early, and Krzyzewski went over and he lit up those officials. And I think he even kind of complained at the sideline reporter when he was going into the locker room at half. I went, uh-oh, this is all about to change, because Krzyzewski's going to get every single call this second half. And sure enough, he did. Remember last week when I was talking about how, you know, there are certain reasons we don't always like Duke? This is one of them. Seems like they always get every single call. Officiating was bad. Officiating was bad in the entire tournament. And it wasn't necessarily just for Duke. It was bad both ways. Really, some glaring calls. The instant replay call, obviously, did the ball touch Winslow's hand going out of bounds? We all saw it. We saw it hit his finger, and then they came back and said we didn't have anything. And then the NCAA came out and said, well, they didn't have the angle that the home TV audience had. That's why they didn't. Well, then you better get them that angle, because the rest of the planet saw it. The only people who didn't see it on planet Earth were the three officials watching the game. You might want to fix that. That might be a little correction you make in the offseason. If they don't have the broadcast feed of the replay, you might want to get it to them. Have them walk over, and sit next to Raftery and the other guy calling it, and have them watch their feed, because it's pretty important, isn't it? We obviously saw the Duke player step out of bounds. Officiating at the college basketball level is a struggle. It's such a constant game, and it's such a fast game. The players are bigger, stronger, faster. It's tough to keep up with. You got to come in and start figuring some things out, though, officiating-wise. I mean, the block charge thing is you would think, a simple fix. Here's what it's going to be. We're going to call it this way every time. They say they're going to do it. They never do it. Some sketchy calls, and they definitely hurt Wisconsin. Did they cost them the game, though? No. You were up 9. You were up 9 with the two best Duke players sitting on the bench, and you couldn't hold on to it. You couldn't keep that. I did think for the record, I was a little weird that when Duke won it, the referees were going out and jumping on the pile and getting a championship hat. I thought that was odd. I thought it was weird that they let them, cut a strand of the net when they cut the nets down. I thought that was a little bit weird, but it didn't, that's just part of the things. That's what it is. Wisconsin, and what one thing that I thought really, really hurt Wisconsin down the stretch, why did you consider going or continue to go under ball screens? Every time there was a ball screen, and there's a few different ways to go, play ball screens. You go over them and you go under them. There's a few different ways. You trap them, whatever. They went under them and under them and under them, and Duke is knocking these jumpers down again and again and again. Tyus Jones keeps hitting these jumpers. And I kept waiting for them to say, okay, let's change what we're doing, because we can't just keep giving up this ball screen jumper. And they never changed it. Some of that, maybe Bo Ryan is over there yelling at the guys to change it, or maybe Bo Ryan is too stubborn and just stuck with what he was doing no matter what. Duke finishes the game on a 14-9 run, and it really did look down the stretch like Wisconsin was out of gas. It looked like they had just spent too much on Kentucky on Saturday night. You know, looking at a few different players, and we're going to hand out some awards in just one second, but, you know, the one player that really stood out to me was Duke center Jahlil Okafor, because I looked at a few different things about him during that game, obviously watching him a lot during this tournament, and I kind of came away with kind of a good news, bad news for Okafor. Obviously, the good news, hey, you won a championship. You won a championship. And no one can ever take that from you. A couple of items of bad news for Okafor. One, it didn't look like you were ready for Frank Kaminsky. Kaminsky dominated Okafor throughout that game, offensively, defensively. And here's the other set of bad news, because even though he didn't look great in that game, he's probably going to be drafted very, very high. So you got your championship, and also, hello, New York Knicks. That's not good news either. Let's hand out a couple of college basketball awards, though, because we, you know, every year we get around to, you know, the end of these certain seasons. We've got to hand out a few awards, you know, finish the season off and kind of put a bow on the entire thing. So let's hand out a few college basketball awards right now. Player of the Year, college basketball. Hey, you got to give it to Frank Kaminsky. Now, I realize, I know what you're saying. What's he going to do at the next level? I don't have any idea. I told you a couple weeks ago, I don't particularly care. We'll look at that when it gets to be that time. But Kaminsky played his best in the big games. I mean, you look at the championship game, 21-12. You look at the Final Four game, 20-11. It just seemed like it didn't matter how big the game was. You look at the Big Ten championship game, stepped up his game. Kaminsky, for whatever reason, seems like he does very, very well in big situations. How could you have any better of a season than he did? And yes, would we think of him better if he was coming from Europe and he was like a Slovenian center than it is, because we see him all the time? Of course, he would probably be drafted higher too. But Frank Kaminsky, without a doubt, your player of the year, your coach of the year this year for college basketball. And I know this is probably going to get some groans and a few people saying, are you kidding me? Who else could you give it to but John Calipari? His team went 38-1. If it was anybody else and you didn't lose your last game, we'd all be, you know, doing backflips and saying what a great job of coaching he did with, again, nothing but basically freshmen and sophomores. And when you look at, and yes, the SEC was bad this year, but look at some of the teams he did beat. Number 5, Kansas. He beat Providence. He beat Texas. He beat North Carolina. UCLA. He beat Louisville, and they were ranked number 4 at the time. West Virginia, beating Notre Dame. Yes, we're going to probably downplay what Kentucky did, but Calipari did a pretty good job. 38, no, did he get outcoached by Bo Ryan in that game? Yes. Yes, he did. But he had a phenomenal run before then. We're going to give out the Bobby Knight Award. Got to give out the Bobby Knight Award. You know, this goes to a coach or player who just loses their mind at a key time. And this year, of course, we're going to give this to Vanderbilt coach Kevin Stallings. After the Tennessee game, big rivalry between Vanderbilt and Tennessee, he has a kid do something disrespectful in the congratulatory handshaking line and yells at the player, "I will kill you." You get the Bobby Knight Award for that. If you, I mean, that is a guarantee. You scream at a kid the words, "I will kill you," I got to give you the Bobby Knight Award. Let's give out another award. This is the Villanova Award. And the Villanova Award is given to a team that is high ranked, has a great regular season, and then always loses early in the tournament. This actually used to be called the Arizona Award. Arizona used to do this every single year, too. The Villanova Award this year goes to, surprisingly, Villanova, who was a number one this year and then lost to the 8 seed in the second round of the tournament. 71-68, North Carolina State takes them down. This also, you know, great during the regular season, lose in the tournament, could also be called the Peyton Manning Award. But it's the Villanova Award, and Villanova keeps their namesake award. The Anderson Hunt Award is given to the college player who we will probably never hear from again. And that award this year is going to go to Duke guard Tyus Jones. And Tyus Jones, you saw him in the championship game, had the great night. Again, like I talked about, a lot of ball screen stuff. He was coming off. He kept hitting those long. They were even contested shots. He kept knocking them down anyways. Are we going to hear from this guy anymore? Probably not. seemed like he just had a night for the ages. He's a decent player. He's not going to grow any size-wise. I don't know if he's going to do anything else. And if you look at Tyus Jones, you look at him and you're going to think to yourself, it looks like Adam Carolla and Eddie Munster had a baby. And that's Tyus Jones. But he wins the Anderson Hunt Award for a player we'll probably never hear from again, especially if he jumps pro this year after, just, what is this, his freshman year? We'll never hear from him again if that's the case. Player you are going to hate next year. Who else could it go to but Duke guard Grayson Allen? Just the name Grayson, doesn't it just seem kind of elitist? It's pretty waspy just to hear the name Grayson. Grayson, go bring around the ponies. It just seems like, and he's pretty good. Kind of looks like a dork. He's going to be the next Duke player that we just grow to loathe. That is going to Grayson Allen, without a doubt. Going to give the NAACP award to Kentucky guard Andrew Harrison. And I think you know why. We're going to give the Helen Keller award, to the tournament officials. And once again, I think you know why. Last award we're going to give out today, and it's one that is a little bit complicated. I got to explain it just a little bit. The Doug McDermott Award. And this Doug McDermott Award, we give this to the white player that when you try to project where they're going to go in the NBA and who they're going to be in the NBA, you can't come up with anyone else to compare them to except other white guys. This year's winner goes to Wisconsin forward Sam Decker, because who are you going to compare him to? Dominique Wilkins? Who are you going to compare him to? Reggie Miller? Nope. You're going to compare him to Chandler Parsons and Gordon Hayward and Tom Gugliotta and John Stockton and Larry Bird and, I don't know, Danny Shays or whatever white guy you can think of. Here's the difference. Decker is a really athletic guy. He runs the floor really, really well. He can shoot a little bit. He's actually okay off the bounce. He's got to improve defensively. That doesn't really fit those other guys. But, you know, it's a white guy, so we got to compare it to another white guy. He wins our Doug McDermott Award of the Year. Let's move on to the NFL. The NFL has hired the first female official in league history. Sarah Thomas is going to be on the field officiating this year in the NFL. And if you don't know, Sarah Thomas has officiated a little bit Conference USA. She's done some Big Ten games. She's done even a few NFL minicamps. And I don't have any issues with them bringing in a female official. Come in and do your job, and we'll scream at you just like we do the males. Makes no difference. I do worry a little bit that she's going to throw a flag downfield, and when the player goes over to her and says, "What did I do?" It's not what you did. It's more just how you made me feel when you did it. I worry a little bit about that. I won't lie. I know it's chauvinistic, but I do worry a little bit about that. Did you see former Bronco wide receiver Wes Welker is visiting Miami today, looking at possibly signing with the Miami Dolphins. Please, please, please. Wes Welker, I like you. You seem like a decent guy. You also seem like you probably talk to trees and just, you're a little bit confused. Please retire. I don't really have too much of a rooting interest in when guys should retire. When Brett Favre came back like 37 times, like, do whatever you want. But when we're talking about head injuries, I don't want to see these guys continue to come back. It is frightening. I'm genuinely afraid I'm going to see something horrible happen on the football field. Wes Welker, take your Old Spice money and go to an island somewhere, please. I don't want to see this happen. Hey, the NFL draft is coming in just about 3 weeks. It starts April 30th. We'll roll through that weekend. We will keep you up to date on the NFL draft, give you an idea of what teams are looking at, what players. We've already got some rumors out there. Starting to hear some rumors about the Tennessee Titans looking to trade up and get themselves a quarterback. We'll keep an eye on them. But, you know, we'll keep you up to date on the NFL draft. That is coming very, very shortly. Right now, we are going to talk something that we rarely talk here on the Daily Dose. And you know, it's that time of year, opening day this week. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball. I know you're shocked. It's okay. And don't tune out just because I said Major League Baseball. I don't harp on Major League Baseball. We got to talk a little bit about it. It was opening day this week. And we've already had some Major League embarrassments. You know, the toilets at Wrigley Field wouldn't work. The roof down in Florida wouldn't, you know, they left it open despite the fact it was raining. That's why you have a roof. You could have closed it. Major League Baseball is just seems to be kind of that dorky, clumsy kid that just seems to trip and fall down. And it's their own fault. They have no one to blame themselves. That's just who Major League Baseball is. But let's talk a little bit of Major League Baseball, because I just want to give you just a brief preview. If you're not a baseball person, that's all right. We'll just give you a brief preview. Looking at the teams who should win this year, Washington Nationals right at the top of the list. They might be the most talented team. They've got probably five legitimate starting pitchers, and they can go five deep. They've got bats. They've got offense. They've got everything. And why do I just feel like we're going to see the Nationals fail again? They'll lose a bunch of games like 2-1 and 3-1 and 1-0, and we'll see the Nationals just, they're good, but not quite there. I think the Boston Red Sox are a team who should win. They should be able to generate some runs. They should be able to generate a lot of scoring. And I realize that their pitching rotation doesn't have a ton of depth. And as a result, we'll see them lose, you know, games just the opposite way. They'll be losing games like 8-6 and 7-5. And they'll be giving up way too many runs. And then, of course, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are completely loaded. Best 1-2 punch in baseball. Obviously got Kershaw, got Greinke, you got Yasiel Puig is a player that is must-see TV when he is on. I want to see what he does next. Because I don't know. It might be the most amazing play ever, or he might just, I don't know, take off his uniform and go running across the field. I don't know what to expect from Puig. Dodgers, probably most talented team in the league. I don't have any idea what they're going to do this year. And neither does anyone else. You know, the teams who aren't going to win, and I'll just give you that heads up too, Yankees. Do you realize that they have 8 out of 9 starters for the New York Yankees are over 30 years of age? That doesn't always translate well. And when you look at their best pitchers with Tanaka and CC Sabathia, just a hair injury prone, probably going to get hurt anytime now. I don't see the Yankees as having a great year. Now, having said that, I'm cheering like crazy for A-Rod just to throw the baseball world in a tizzy. Houston Astros. Houston Astros are basically the equivalent of the Philadelphia 76ers. They're trying to lose. They are tanking. They are doing what the people in the business call building assets. That's what the Houston Astros are do. Don't expect them to win much. And I'm going to put one more team in there. Yes, locally, the Colorado Rockies. Now, yes, they've won their first two games. And I know, let's throw a parade before they figure it out. But the Colorado Rockies did literally, I'm not exaggerating about doing nothing in the offseason. They did nothing in the offseason at all. Like, I think they closed up their offices and they left for like 6 months. They stood completely pat after going 66-96 last year. And we know this. We know that Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez are going to get hurt. We know it will happen. It's just a matter of when. And so the Colorado Rockies, once again, will flounder and they won't do anything and they'll struggle and they won't make the playoffs. And right at the end of the season, they'll win like, you know, 3 out of 4 against, I don't know, the Giants or somebody. And everybody say, oh man, just wait till next year. They're going to be so good next year. The Rockies aren't going to win. Don't believe the hype. I'm going to give you three teams that I do want you to keep an eye on though. Teams that might actually surprise some people. The Cleveland Indians. No, this isn't Major League, but the Cleveland Indians have some really good young arms. They have a ton of potential. They went and got Brandon Moss, who is capable of giving them some hitting. They're going to contend for the AL Central. Keep an eye on the Cleveland Indians. Bizarrely, the New York Mets. The Mets are probably going to be better than the Yankees this year. The New York Mets, they've got a good starting lineup. They've got a solid bullpen. They're pretty good defensively. Of course, they are the Mets. And I don't know if they can generate, you know, quite enough offense, but keep an eye on the Mets this year. Might be decent. Might be okay in the NL East. And then the team that, honestly, I don't know if they're going to be better, but the San Diego Padres, they're at least going to be interesting. And I don't care. I don't care that they went out and signed a bunch of people to all these contracts and maybe they won't be good. At least they went and did something. Colorado Rockies. They went and got Will Myers. They went and got Matt Kemp, Justin Upton. That is what teams should be doing. You can go spend the money. Quit just putting all the money in your own account. One of the reasons I can't stand baseball. Drives me nuts. Maybe it's just because we have a horrible team here in Colorado. I don't know. Either way. Let's move on and talk a little bit of NBA playoffs, because the NBA playoffs are coming really, really quickly. And, you know, we've only got like six games. Some teams are down to four or five games left. And when you look at the, you know, the way this is all shaping up, when you look at how the playoff picture is starting to shape up, there are some things that we can tell right away. There are a few things that we can see right off the bat. Atlanta in the East, they're undoubtedly the first seed. No question about that. But I'll tell you what, when you look at the eight seed, you've got Boston, 35-42. You've got Miami, who is so injured, 35-43. And you've got Indianapolis at 34-43 as well. The team they don't want to see is the Indiana Pacers. They do not want to see the Pacers. The Pacers could give Atlanta the exact type of problem that they don't want. They could crash the offensive boards really, really hard. Atlanta is not a great defensive rebounding team. I'm telling you right now, they're cheering like crazy for Boston. They're cheering like crazy for Miami. They don't want anything to do with having to face the Pacers. And now with Paul George back, and yes, it's going to take him a while to really get going, but they don't want anything to do with Indy. Cleveland now has won 18 in a row at home. Someone's going to be going to Cleveland. Chicago, Toronto, Washington, they're all kind of in that bunch. Milwaukee, Brooklyn, they're all trying to fight for a position, and it's all so tight right in there. No one wants to go to Cleveland. Well, except Joakim Noah with Chicago, who says he's not afraid to go to Cleveland at all. Chicago should have Derrick Rose back this week. We'll keep an eye on that and see how they look. Obviously, Chicago has found a way to live without Rose. They are much, much better when he is back and he is healthy. When you look over at the West, same kind of situation. First place, Golden State, is so far ahead of everyone that their position is not going to move at all. Would they rather see the New Orleans Pelicans or the Oklahoma City Thunder? I think we can figure that out, although the Pelicans are kind of a pain too. And then when you look at that other section of teams from 2 to 6, you've got Houston, Memphis, Portland, the Clippers, and the Spurs. Basically, what everyone is trying to jockey position, they want to play Dallas, who is sitting at 7. So they're all trying to win and move up into that number 2 spot so they could see Dallas. And what teams don't want, no one wants to see the Spurs, because I know they're older and I know it seems like they're you know, eventually going to start breaking down. And maybe this is the year, I don't know. But no one wants to face the San Antonio Spurs, because you just figure, well, what if they kind of get it going right now? We don't want to see them. A couple teams the Spurs do not want to see first round. They do not want to see the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know if anyone wants to see the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that's a very, very dangerous team for anybody out there. Just the way they play and the pace that they play and the way that they can beat you physically, the way that they can hurt you a number of different ways. I know their guards and their outside shooting is not great, but no one wants to see Memphis. Keep an eye on this NBA playoff race, because it is going to get interesting over the next week. Playoffs are going to be starting next week. We already are going to start having games toward the end of next week. We'll be wrapping up the regular season. Going to be interesting to keep an eye on that NBA playoff race. Hey, just one bit of news coming out that I want to touch on really, really briefly. It looks like, and I'm going to butcher this name, but Zokar Tsarnaev, whoever, the guy who did the bombing in the Boston Marathon, has just been convicted and found guilty. And now it's going to be a matter of if they'd get the death penalty for him or not. Just something to throw in really, really quick. Now, as we do every single week, and we've got to get to this week, we have our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5, it may change from week to week. You never know. It might give you a couple different things. But this week, you know, watching Duke get their win and get their championship, and you start looking, you know, Mike Krzyzewski and some of the great players that they've had in the past. If you haven't read the article that is up on dailydosesports.wordpress.com, go check it out. There's an article on there in Duke about how the underdog, you know, just found a way to win this year. Go check that out. I encourage you. I think you'll like it. But I was thinking about, you know, Grayson Allen and some of those players that it just seems like Allen's going to be that next round of Duke player that we hate. So our Daily Dose Top 5 this week, the most hated Duke players of all time. And when I started to go through this list, I was like, man, there is a lot more guys out there than what I thought. There are like a lot of Duke players out there that really had a that kind of villain reputation and just had, they were easy to kind of not cheer for. You just wanted to see them do poorly. So this week, Daily Dose top five most hated Duke players of all time. Number five on our list. And by all accounts, he seems like a decent guy. He's a good player. But Shane Battier has to be on this list. I mean, I think he was the originator of all the flopping that we see at Duke right now. He was the king of when a player is driving, he would slide in and just flop to his back like a Brazilian soccer player. And somehow, because it's Krzyzewski and Duke, he would get that charge call. Even though that's absolutely not a charge. Shane Battier, you can even remember the chants going back to Duke and who's your daddy, Battier, and all that nonsense. Always looked like the skin on his head was just squeezed up a little too tight. Shane Battier enters our list at number five most hated Duke player of all time. Number four on our list, and not nearly as good of a player, just kind of an easy guy to hate, Cherokee Parks. Cherokee Parks was a big, pale, white guy named Cherokee. How are you named Cherokee when you're a big, pale, white guy? There's nothing about you that says Cherokee. Unathletic, couldn't hardly run. He kind of ran like a pregnant deer up and down the floor. And then he hit the league, and it was pretty apparent very, very early when he hit the NBA, he wasn't going to be able to hang. He wasn't athletic enough. Just being big at the NBA level isn't going to be enough. So then he started to change his look, because his look was kind of, the well-coiffed hair and the clean-cut look, and he went full tattoos and just completely changed how he looked. Cherokee Parks has to be on our list of most hated player. Number three on our list, most hated Duke players of all time, Steve Wojciechowski. Wojo is now, of course, Krzyzewski's, head assistant. And I've been at a few clinics that Krzyzewski was speaking at, and Wojo, literally, where Krzyzewski goes, Wojo bumps into him if he stops, because he follows just everywhere he goes. And in his playing days, Wojciechowski really didn't score much. He didn't have many assists. He wasn't a clutch three-point shooter. He wasn't a guy who went out and got rebounds. But he led the country in floor slaps and the words, "Come on, guys." He led the nation in that. And for that alone, being, the triumphant little soldier, Steve Wojciechowski makes our list of top five most hated Duke players of all time. He is at number three. Number two on our list, he was hated. The crowds got on him, and he loved it. J.J. Redick would knock down the three, and then he would go let your crowd know he had just hit a three in your eye. And he hit a bunch of them. And I'll give Redick credit, because for as much grief as we kind of give Duke and Krzyzewski of guys that don't go on to the NBA and do very well, Redick is still playing, and still playing at a pretty good level out in Los Angeles for the Clippers. Redick was a phenomenal shooter. And as soon as he walked in the door, you saw opposing crowds start getting on him, holding up the signs, chanting all the different things, and Redick loved it. He would eat it up. He would hit the three and turn around to the student section and wave it on to bring on more. J.J. Redick, definitely one of the most hated Duke players of all time. Number one, if they make a documentary called "I Hate Christian Laettner," you can trust and know for sure that you are the most hated Blue Devil of all time. Christian Laettner was a punk. He was cocky. He was a little bit dirty. He was a trash talker. He was completely a villain. And Christian Laettner was really, really good. Number one on our most hated Duke player of all time, without question, is Christian Laettner. And our most hated coach of all time has to be Krzyzewski as well. Is Krzyzewski on your list of greatest coaches of all time? Did he pass John Wooden with what he just did? For me personally, it puts him in that same area. I know a lot of people on Monday night caught up in the emotion of it. Well, this passes Wooden. He's passed Wooden now. Has he? Has he really? He's in that same area. I'll put him up there, because when Wooden was coaching, you didn't have as many programs. You didn't have as many great players, and you could stockpile all the players on one team. So I'll put Krzyzewski in there. Did he pass him? again, remember what we talked about a couple weeks ago on the top five when we said we can't just have these statements that are just broad statements and say, well, now we know this in a single elimination tournament. You can't just have these, okay, for sure now we know without a doubt Krzyzewski is the greatest coach of all time. No. I mean, keep in mind, he was just a few points away from losing to Bo Ryan just a couple nights ago. If he loses, then we're probably, again, talking about how, well, you know, he just doesn't quite have it. He's found a way to lose four or five championships now. He's just not quite. That's how close it is. That's the fine line that it is. Hey, next week, we will get you ready for the NBA playoffs. Like I said, they are going to be coming up very, very quickly. We are going to recap the Masters a little bit, and we'll keep an eye on Tiger and see what happens over the weekend and keep an eye on things down there and who actually is playing. Now, you can take Tiger if you want. I'm not going to. We're going to start looking ahead at the NFL draft. Get you ready for the NFL draft. Who is your team looking at? Who are some of the players they're looking at? And who are a couple of stories that we might be keeping an eye on? And, of course, as we do every single week, we will bring you the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know where that's going to go. If you get a chance, please, please, please go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, give us a nice review. It doesn't have to be anything big. Just, I love the podcast. That's plenty. Make sure you share it with a friend. If you know someone that you think would like the podcast, our numbers are continually getting better. Keep encouraging more and more people. I thank you so much for what you've done so far. Let's keep this going, because the bigger it gets, the better it gets. As usual, I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do it without you. I will see all of you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
To say what we're about to say.
We believe your wife is a German spy.
This year, the truth will be discovered.
I know for a fact you'll be proven wrong.
Allied, starring Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. Allied, in cinemas November 25th, rated TBC.
Hey, what happened to my kiss?